So I finally got around to sending out boxes of some of my stuff. I think I sent out a bourbon barrel, an orange, that orange cream. Well, so it didn't turn out to be the cream thing, but it's like an orange braggot. I think a couple of the guys got, I had a couple of bottles of vanilla mead. Actually, I got more than that, but I kind of mixed them up. I sent two of them a bottle of this vanilla mead thing that I made quite a while back. So two of them got something different. And then the graph went out, something that Chris and I want to kind of talk about here a little bit. So today, I sent the guys the tracking numbers and I said, you know, here's what you're getting. It should be there on Tuesday by the time we go live. So today, I don't know who started it off. Maybe I think it was Jeff. Okay. Which one do you want us to drink? Well, I don't care. Whatever you want to drink. And the next thing I know, Chris has got an email coming. Well, I was looking at the bourbon barrel thing and I don't know, something else, a graph or something else. And then another email comes back from Jeff. Well, I was kind of thinking the bourbon barrel and the orange beer. And then another email came from Chris. Well, yeah, I was thinking maybe we'll do the orange and the bourbon. I'm thinking, boy, I'm sure glad I'm not in the middle of that. Hey, welcome.
What happens
to the...
when you...
Go ahead.
What happens when you give us choices?
Yeah. it's like asking my wife to go for dinner. Well, I don't care. What do you want? Yeah, let's not get into that. Welcome to the Mead House podcast version these days. The usual thing, themeadhouse.com. That's kind of where we live. The show is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcastpedia, various places. We're on the Facebook deal, and that's picking up, activity. You know, we get, one or two or three more hits, every week, which is pretty cool. I don't know how many followers we have, but, the Mead House, if you go to Facebook, just simply the Mead House and then, themeadhouse.com. That's where you can pick up the replays as well. And hey, just log into the page. The player up on the upper right has the latest episode when it gets uploaded, and just push the play button. Ryan Richardson in the house tonight. Aaron Martin is off for the second week, and I thought, guys, I didn't get this out soon enough, and it's kind of late now, but what I was going to do is have you, you know, grab a Pepsi, a Coke, something off the wall, a lemonade, whatever, and let's review this drink, okay? And then pretend like it's the other two meads that Aaron sent us. And then when he comes back and listens to the show, he'll hear these reviews about these oddball drinks that have nothing to do with his two meads. And I thought it might have sent him into a panic. But it was too late to get the email out. But Aaron Martin off tonight. Mississippi Chris Spencer in the house. Jeff Schaus along for the ride. My name is J.D. Webb. And usually about this time we ask Jeff if he cruised around to Facebook and if he found anything interesting.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I did. I've got a few different posts here. Actually, one from just a couple hours ago. Graham, I'm sorry, I'm going to murder this name. Siaf had a batch that he had started up with mango, kiwi, and spinach, and I've never heard or seen spinach used in a mead that was off the wall and kind of interesting and new. So that was worth a mention for the just for the novelty of it. Also on Mead Makers, I saw a post from Casey Welke. He's barrel aging a 5-berry Melomel. It's looking like it might be a 5-gallon barrel. It might be a 10-gallon barrel. It's kind of hard to tell from the photo, but it is an actual barrel sitting in his house doing some aging. And man, am I jealous of people that have the space and the ability to do that.
Yeah.
Then, let's see, on the Mead group, I saw that, Daniel Percelli had, was sampling a batch of his elderberries, along with a new bush that he just planted. That piqued my interest because I recently got bottled up a batch of mulberry that we had made with mulberries out of my own backyard. And now that I bottled that and we're tasting it, man, we want more mulberries badly.
Cool.
Then the last one I thought was an interesting possible point of discussion for us here. Warren Early on Mead Makers had a little spread of fruit out on his cutting board. We've got some apricots, a kiwi, a mango, just a bunch of different fruits that he was trying out for, I guess,
later. You're kind of cutting out there, Jeff. I don't know if you got something rubbing up against your microphone.
I don't think so, but...
We lost Ryan. Let me get Ryan a call back. All right, let's try Ryan again. Okay, keep going. Warren, start from the top with Warren again.
Yeah, Warren early on the Mead Group had an interesting post with a little spread of fruit that he was kind of arranging out there for research and development purposes. Looks like he had some kiwi and some mango, a few apricots, just a big spread of different interesting looking fruits. And I think the idea was to try and see how they combine. And I thought I would ask you guys, you know, what's your philosophy for trying that out? I mean, where do you get your ideas for flavor combinations from?
And
you're wanting to, like, come up with something new, I should say.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I just mostly it's either something I've had before, either in food or at a restaurant, or I just I picture it in my mind that it would go good together, and sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. I kind of, a lot of times I'll be walking through the store and I'll see different things, ingredients. If I walk through the produce department, you know, I'm looking at all the fruit. And the Ralph's store out here that we have, it's like a huge, place is huge. And they've got this humongous produce section. And they've got this one little corner, this one little display. Actually, it's quite large, but it's a whole bunch of exotic-looking fruit. And I'm always walking by there, picking stuff up and smelling it. I mean, they've got some really oddball stuff that doesn't even look edible. But other than that, I mean, with Chris, I mean, stuff that I like to eat, stuff that I like to drink, beer, the different beers, I guess that's how I come up with my ideas.
Yeah, that's fair. That's pretty
and simple. I might say also, Jeff, I may be mistaken, but I believe I saw the name Warren Early on the list of winners from the Mazer Cup. I may be mistaken about that, but if you were on there, congratulations, and if you weren't, join the crowd.
Was that the same guy?
I don't know. I would need to go back and look at the list. It's been almost a week since I looked at that list.
Yeah,
me too. But I think I remember seeing that name on the list of winners somewhere on there. Anyway, if you're on there, congratulations.
Yeah. if that's you, Warren, congratulations. Mm-hmm. Cool. Is that all you found?
Yeah, that was it for the week.
Perfect. Sounds good. Some good stuff out there. Speaking of barrels, the other day I was cruising around on that Craigslist deal, and I found that to be a pretty good resource looking for, you know, brewing equipment and stuff. And I found a guy that lives in Burbank, not too far from me. It's about 11 miles east of me, who had a bunch of beer bottles. He had 61 bottles for sale, and these were 12-ounce and 22-ounce bottles. I thought, well, I've heard Ryan talk about liking, you know, he likes to use these 22 ounces because you know, for two people, it's a nice pour. You get two reasonable sized glasses out of it. So I thought,
well, I never said anything about sharing.
Well, that's true. So I found this ad and I contacted this guy and said, hey, I'm interested in your bottle. So I go out there and, for $30, dude, I get this whole big plastic bin full of bottles. I don't know how many, you know, of one or the other there are, but, there's something like 61 bottles is what was in it. But I thought that was a pretty good find. But while I was looking, when I found that, there were also some ads in there for used bourbon barrels, single use bourbon barrels. In other words, they put the bourbon in. Let it sit there for however many years or whatever it takes, and then they empty it out, and then that's it. They're done. And for $180, these are regular full size, like now, what are they, 10 gallon, or no, they're bigger than that. Pretty good sized barrel.
Probably 50 or 55.
Yeah, pretty decent sized barrels, but I thought, you know, I kept thinking about Ryan and his bourbon barrel stave, and I thought, you know, I wonder if I could get one of these barrels and take it someplace and just have the damn thing cut up into little pieces, and have a lifetime supply of bourbon barrel. You know, maybe go into business selling nothing but bourbon barrel staves, the real deal. But I'm not sure that would even work. Of course, why wouldn't it, you know?
I'm sure the bourbon barrel stave sellers are just taking, the barrels that no longer hold water and repurposing them with a table saw or a bandsaw. So, absolutely, that could work. I'm just not sure your profit margin would be there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
For your information, the typical U.S. bourbon barrel is 53 gallons.
53 gallons. Okay.
Yep. 200 liters.
200 liters. I gotta find somebody who's got a garage that, and that's another thing. I mean, nobody I know out here has a garage. So I need to find somebody, where I can take this barrel, cut it up in little pieces. Hell, I'd even give the stuff away, you know, if it, you know, would give me a decent supply of bourbon barrel staves. But, at any rate, normally, we would go through this, you know, what are we drinking thing. And I thought, well, since I sent out the meads to everybody and it sounds like everybody got theirs, right? Which is kind of surprising because I didn't expect there were two of you that, you know, going by the tracking number, wasn't supposed to arrive until Wednesday. I knew, it looked like Chris and Jeff were going to get theirs today, but Ryan and Aaron weren't going to get theirs until Wednesday. But Ryan, you got the box already? It came?
Oh, yeah. I got the first one in the cup right now.
Cool. So I thought, well, rather than go through this whole what we're drinking thing tonight, these guys are all drinking something in a bottle that I sent them a few days ago. I'll start it off. I didn't know what was in this bottle because all my bottles are unlabeled. It had a green top on it, and I knew that could be one of two things, either the graph or the cinnamon cider that I had done a while back. Well, it turns out this is the graph I'm drinking. So that's what I'm having. It's come a long ways. And I'm starting to like it a little bit. And but I do have to say, Chris, this one tastes different than the one I had the other day and screamed and hollered to you about on when I sent you the text. This one tastes a little bit more tart to me than the other one did, but I still enjoy it. So,
they will continue to change. Mine is, a month or two, older than yours, and it's still changing. It's changing less now, but It's still changing some.
I think it's still not to where I still think it needs to be worked on some more. You know, what to do with it, I don't know, but perhaps, you know, we can spend some time together and figure out, you know, where would we want to take this, what would be the next step, or what would we do differently to make it come out even better. But that's a longer discussion than we want to have here tonight. But so, I asked these guys, just use the use that review sheet, that document that Aaron had sent out, and tell me what you think about what I sent. Whoever wants to start. Anybody? I'll appoint one. Jeff, your name's on the top of the list here on my sheet, so you start it off.
Well, I cracked open the bourbon barrel first. I haven't touched the graph yet, but I intend to later. So let's work down the sheet with this.
Now, first of all, the bourbon barrel, this is the first one that I did. This is the one that has 6 pounds of honey. It just is straight up beer recipe. I added 6 pounds of honey to it. Nothing different from the beer recipe other than just the honey. So take it from there.
Sure. So appearance wise, it is, a really dark brown bordering on black. It is opaque. It has a really nice, little foamy kind of a porter stout head on it. That obviously indicates some carbonation. Looks for all intents and purposes like a porter or a stout beer. The aroma is light. I'm not getting a lot of honey because there's a really strong kind of roasty character to it. Although there is definitely a sweetness, I'm not sure if that's a honey sweetness or a malty sweetness. I kind of lean towards the maltiness on it. And I'm not getting a lot of hop aroma, but that's really pretty close to style for a porter anyway. As far as the flavor goes, it is really spot on. There is a good amount of that roast flavor and just the right amount of the bitterness to it to give it a little bit of a bite. I think the honey comes through more at the middle to the end than anywhere else. Otherwise, I would think it's just a stout or a porter, but you kind of get that lingering sweetness that's something more than just a malt in there at the very end. And that's kind of where that honey character is coming through for me. The body it feels like a stout to me. And then as far as other flavors, I'm getting a little bit, it's not exactly a stone fruit flavor. It's almost like a little bit of a raisin flavor. It's not exactly a toasted marshmallow flavor so much as more of like a toffee flavor, I think, is what I'm tasting here. Overall, just skipping down to the overall impression area. I mean, like I said, it tastes really close to a porter. I like a porter, and you know, this is a pretty good rendition of that. The honey could be stronger, but I don't think I would necessarily want it to be any sweeter though either. Because I think that would just get going really fast with the malt sweetness that the porter already leaves behind and the addition of the honey. So maybe the balance between malt and honey needs to get skewed a little bit more towards the honey to make it a little bit more raggedy. But altogether, it's a really good drink, and I'm enjoying it.
Are you getting any kind of a bourbon aroma, taste, anything
The bourbon taste does come through.
Bourbon?
Yeah, it's come through at the aftertaste especially. It's not particularly strong, but
okay. This is 18. This one has 18 ounces of Eagle Rare bourbon, 10-year Eagle Rare bourbon in it.
It definitely has a flavor that it has. It, to me, it indicates it's been sitting on some wood aging, or it's had some kind of an oak based flavor added to it. I'm not sure I would put my finger on bourbon barrel especially so much as just some kind of oak, but the flavor is there. I think that could be a little bit stronger too, and it wouldn't hurt it at all, especially with the malt sweetness to it.
Okay.
You know, there's it's going to be difficult to get more honey to come through in something that's this strongly flavored and dark, I think.
I agree.
Something else you need to be aware of too. This is a 13% alcohol. This is 13% ABV.
Yeah.
Yeah. The head is dark tan, and it's got a hell of a head on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a candy-like quality in the nose. If you take a really deep breath through your nose, it's like a raisiny brown sugar or something.
Interesting.
And almost a fruitiness in the aroma. Let me see here now. What's this thing?
I don't know where the
wow.
Go ahead.
It's got a very thick mouthfeel to it. It's heavy bodied.
Okay. I wonder if that's coming from the honey.
I think the honey definitely contributes to it.
Yeah, probably. There's you know, normally you wouldn't hear me say this, but you know, I might even go with a little bit more hops in this just to balance out that sweetness a little bit more.
I would have to agree. That was my thinking, too. Now, this has got, like I said, this is the bourbon barrel porter straight up recipe from Northern Brewer. It has 1 ounce of Chinook hops. 1 ounce of U.S. Goldings, and I know one is a 60-minute, and one is a 5-minute. Now, take that back. Chinooks are 60 minutes. The Goldings, a half ounce at 15 minutes, and another half ounce at 5 minutes. So they're not going to contribute a whole lot to flavor. That's kind of more around the aroma.
Goldings are kind of
that bourbon. To me, the bourbon is there.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Jeff. Couldn't hear you.
I just interjected that Goldings are a traditional English flavor and bittering hop. Flavor and aroma hop. They're not a bittering hop.
Okay.
Well, you couldn't drink more than a glass of this, though, for sure. Because it would knock you on your ass.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I first drank it, when I first poured myself a glass, and I sat here and I thought, man, something's going on with my brain. Something. I sat here and started feeling light in, and I'm going, wow, something, is it my medication? Or what the hell's going on here? And I'm thinking, oh, it can't be this beer. It's just one bottle of beer, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm. So, in the taste, I'm getting like a dark kind of a, I don't know, almost a like a raisin or a prune or some sort of dark dried fruit, along with a certain amount of roastiness. And I can't really say that I can taste the honey, but I think the honey's doing something there that it wouldn't be the same without it. Maybe even almost a molasses type flavor, but the bourbon is definitely on the aftertaste.
Okay.
But I'm sensitive to bourbon because I had a bad experience with it. So, yeah, so I can really pick up the bourbon like after you take a sip and it's gone for a few seconds, then the bourbon really hits.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if I would say it's a perfect braggot, but it's definitely a good drink, whatever you want to call it. If you start trying to stick it into style guidelines, I don't know if you could, you know, if it would hold its own, but to pour a glass and say, here's a good dark, beer-based, honey-based drink. Yeah, I mean, it's a good drink.
Yeah.
My only change would probably be just to maybe up the bittering just a little bit, just because of the thick mouthfeel and sweetness.
You know, okay. If I were to give you a word of advice regarding braggots, just from what I've seen so far, I would up the hops kind of a lot of it and just let it hang out for a year before you try it. From what I've seen on my own end doing a similar-ish porter and Beauchay braggot, it develops a lot in character over a rather extended period of time. It was good to me after sitting in the carboy for several months. After it had sit on a shelf in a bottle for another year, my house guests were giving it rave reviews and telling me it was like the best thing I'd ever made.
This was,
in the aftertaste, the more I drink of this, the more molasses is coming through, but I'm also starting to pick up some of that green grassy note, kind of an herbal green taste. And that's almost, I can almost guarantee you that's from the honey. And, you know, nothing fixes that better than age. So I would probably load this thing up with more hops, do nothing else different except load it up with hops and then put it back and forget about it for a good long while.
And I was going to say, as this glass warms up, I'm getting more of the bourbon too. So that may be an issue of cold versus, you know, approaching a room temperature for me.
This was put together on October 6th, and it went into the keg on December 7th, and bottled just shortly thereafter. I don't go by the start date. I go by the date that it goes in a keg or bottle, which would be December 7th, so it's that old as far as I'm concerned. So,
well, I would keep it. I think by Christmas, by this coming Christmas, it'll be a whole different animal and probably a whole lot better as far as the smoothness. But, man, there's nothing wrong with this now at all.
No, I mean, it's just, this is the kind of thing I would like to like have a glass of while I'm sitting around a fire and, you know, just, you know, bullshitting with friends and stuff.
So your improvement would be to add hops. Now, like I said, there's 1 ounce of Chinook hops up front to 60 minute and then the other Golding to 15 and 5. So would I increase the Chinooks at 60? Ounce and a half, maybe?
You know, yeah, I would say,
or go with something completely different, like.
I like Chinook and Goldings together. I think they make a good combination. In fact, that's the same combination I used in my Red Irish braggot. I would just go more, you know, and
yeah. You know, I don't know that it needs a lot more bitterness. You'd probably be fine with adding another half an ounce of the Chinook, another maybe an ounce, depending on how long you wanted to bottle age it, because that will start to mellow out as it ages too, which is something to keep in mind.
Don't be afraid of the hops, because you're going to lose some in a year or a year and a half of aging.
Yeah.
Okay. I would definitely double up on all those additions of the Goldings, if not maybe just a little bit more. That way you get another punch of that aroma and that, the flavor character to it.
Cool. Good deal. I appreciate, you have no idea how much this means to me. I really appreciate the input. I'm sitting here nervous. I mean, it's like I'm at the Academy Awards and I'm wondering if I got best actor. Are they going to call my name? So it's good to hear. Well, I haven't heard from Ryan yet. Now, Ryan's got one up on both of you, because he's already had this, and he's having it for the second time. So, and I need to hear from Ryan again. Now, Ryan had something quite a bit different than what Jeff and Chris came up with, but there's been some time in between since Brian had the first one and Chris and Jeff had theirs. So, Ryan, you're up, bud.
Yeah. You know, first to talk just a little bit about what Jeff and Chris were mentioning, you know, my gold medal mead, you know, which was made on this Bragg experiment we were doing, I started that on 10/8, so October 8th. And yeah, I didn't taste it for the first time until it was 4.5 months, almost 5 months old. And it's really come even from going from 5 months to 6 months, it really, you can tell it's rounded out. It's done that. So I think age as well. I'm pulling a few bottles aside of mine to see after that 1 year mark as well, how it's going. You know, I was looking at my notes on mine, and I did 2 ounces of hops. I did 1 ounce of Columbus at 60 minutes, and then 1 ounce of Cascade at 20 minutes. And that seemed, for, again, you know, we weren't making the same thing by any means, but we both had about 12 pounds of fermentables in there, because I had 6 pounds of dark, you know, liquid malt syrup and 6 pounds of honey. So, I mean, there's a lot in there, and that seemed to balance it out about right. So if you can, you know, looking for any advice off of the hops, I guess, you know, like I said, that's worked for me, and something with the same backbone, you know, not the same anything else, but kind of the same backbone there. You know, 1 ounce of Columbus at 60 and 1 ounce of Cascade at 20. Now, I went back to my notes. The first time that I tasted this Bourbon Barrel 1, I said that it had a very creamy mouthfeel, a very full, you know, very, very full mouthfeel. I said that I was surprised by the acidity that I was getting from it, and that I was getting quite a bit of chocolate. And then I also marked that overall it was very smooth. It was a good drinker. Now that was when I had it right out of the refrigerator. I don't know what that refrigerator was set to, but I mean, I was drinking it pretty cold. Today I'm drinking it, at room temperature, slightly below room temperature. I mean, it's the glass is cool to the touch, but it's not by any means
cold
or even what you might call chilled. I still get that that very, very creamy mouthfeel. I still think it's smooth. The chocolate I got the first time, I'm not getting as much now. At room temperature here, I'm getting some dried fruit. I'd say that I'm getting some raisin, maybe some dry cherry.
That's exactly what I was thinking, like a dark dried cherry.
Yeah. Mm. I'm also getting, and I know this is going to sound odd, but right on the finish, I'm getting a hint of ash. I don't think you were ashing your cigar into the carboy
no.
or anything, but
no.
I'm getting just a bit of that, a hint of that like tobacco ash. And I wouldn't say that it's off-putting. I know that sounds very odd, but you know, some, you can look at a fine wine that'll say tobacco in it, you know, and
that's a very common, that's very common with a lot of bourbons too. You get this leather, sometimes cigar. So that's interesting.
It's got very little head. The head is hanging out. It's still hanging out here, but it's very, very, very low. I still think there's a bit of acidity in it.
And you think that's
that
coming from the honey?
Maybe. Yeah, I think that's the mead aspect of it.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I don't have Aaron's sheet in front of me, so I'm trying to do this the best I can without it. I still say it's smooth. Now, right below my notes for BB1, I've got my notes for BB2. And okay. JD, help me remember here. So this guy had BB1 had what, 6 pounds of 6 pounds of honey,
yes.
And it was your Eagle Rare. Bourbon Barrel 2 had what, 1 pound of honey or 2 pounds of honey?
Two pounds of honey.
Yep.
And one had Evan Williams single barrel.
Now, I feel bad saying this because Chris and Jeff don't have this in front of them, but by comparison, what I had written under Bourbon Barrel 2, my notes had said it's more balanced than Bourbon Barrel 1. Less mouthfeel, bittersweet chocolate, extremely drinkable and enjoyable, and I'm getting chocolate-covered cherry is what I'm pulling out of it. Now, I don't know. I think that, you know, reading my notes for both of these, drinking Bourbon Barrel 1 for a second time, it has me thinking the same thing that Chris was saying, that we're getting a lot of acidity from the extra 4 pounds of honey in Bourbon Barrel 1 versus Bourbon Barrel 2. Mm-hmm. And to me, while this is still a very enjoyable or drinkable beverage, and while I think that it does, I mean, it's something that's going to leave you feeling full and satisfied after you have a drink of it.
Yeah.
I really wonder if this kit that you made this from, you know, is better suited with less honey. I think that like I said, that Bourbon Barrel 2, where you use 2 pounds of honey instead of 6, to me was the clear champion, was the clear winner. Based on my notes and that, I mean, Bourbon Barrel 2, I mean, is something that I would enter in competition. It's something that I would buy if it were available to buy on the, buy at the liquor store. 'Cause that's mm-hmm. how much I said I liked it. But I just wonder what else we can learn from this. I do like that it is so robust and it is so, I don't want to use the word heavy. So let's say full, it's very full. But I wish we could temper a little bit of this back and bring out more of what was in, bourbon barrel, two. So I don't know, maybe Ryan, it is that 6 pounds of honey.
Ryan, let me just make a comment on what you just said. You know, I went through this whole experimentation with different kinds of beers, trying to find what I thought would be the perfect bracket. And in the process, I didn't do a porter, but I did three different stouts. I did a chocolate milk stout. I did a regular dry Irish stout, and I did an oatmeal stout. And I came to the conclusion that those types of beers are not the best braggots, in at least for my taste. And that's why I didn't choose that. So, you know, I think that in the stouts and porters, they already have a certain acidity to them anyway, because of the dark roasted grains. And they've just got so much going on that when you try to add in another layer from the mead, it's just almost too much. And this drink here, like you said, I don't have the other one to compare to, but with this one here, forget about the alcohol. I mean, just it's so filling that you drink one glass of it and you're done. Now, I don't have a problem with that, because most of the mead that I make is the same way. That's why I bottle in 375s. One glass and you're done. But I don't know. For some reason, when I think beer and I think braggot, I think about something that is, if you wanted to have more than one, you could. And with this, I don't honestly think I could drink two of them, you know, put the alcohol aside. It's just so filling. And it's got to be coming from the honey, because I know a porter is not that heavy bodied.
I wouldn't.
And as far as. Do what?
Yeah, go ahead. Finish your sentence, sir.
Oh, you know, Ryan just said that Bourbon Barrel 2 was more balanced than Bourbon Barrel 1. And I think that may be what led me to say more hops, because that extra bitterness is going to help bring that into balance. But even though the flavor might be in balance, you've still got a problem of drinking half a glass and being full. You feel like you ate a meal.
Yeah, this is more, I would not drink. I mean, this is not something that you would drink with dinner. This is not something that, you know, this is not, you know, after the lawn mowing, you know, type of thing. I mean, this is something quiet night, you know, this is like an after dinner thing, I'm thinking. You know, and hell, if they made 6 ounce beer bottles, I'd probably bottle it in that and call it a day, but.
You can get those.
Can you?
they're 187 millimeter. They're usually sold as 187 millimeter champagne bottles, is what, you know, they're most commonly called splits. But they do take just a standard crown cap. So you can actually bottle them in, you know, I think 187 milliliters is roughly 6.5 ounces or so.
Yes, I don't know if I'll make it again quite like this. I have another kit coming, another bourbon barrel porter coming. And what I was going to do was reduce the honey down to about 3 to 3.5 pounds and caramelize the honey. Just till it gets to that marshmallowy. Now, here's the thing. And the thing that most concerns me, and this may be the difficulty that you're having, you know, I recognize the comment about the chocolate. Chocolate covers everything. Chocolate will cover, I don't care if you're baking cakes, making ice cream, making cookies. Chocolate will cover the flavor of most everything else. And that may be what's happening here. And it may be because I'm not satisfied with it at all, because I don't get enough bourbon. I want more of the bourbon aroma, the flavor, and I don't get that at all. And there's 18 ounces in both of them, two different kinds of bourbon.
If I were making this, I most certainly would not want more bourbon.
No, I won't put it in more bourbon.
I'm not a fan of bourbon, but you know, I think Jeff said sitting by a fire drinking this, I can see if you did nothing else to it, if you just left it like it is,
yeah.
On a really cold night after a hard day's work, you come in and you sit by the fireplace and grab a glass of this. I can see that.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. All right. Very good.
Now, Judy, that's what I did with mine. You know, I my notes said that I caramelized it. Now again, I do mine on the stove. You get a stock pot and I boil my honey on the stovetop. And my notes said that I did 6 pounds of honey for 40 minutes. Which was just until it started to get that toasted marshmallow aroma. Yeah. But it definitely was not, you know, black or dark or giving any of that burnt. So here's what I'm thinking is with your raw honey, 6 pounds was too much. And I thought 2 pounds was damn near perfect. But on mine, where I did 6 pounds of caramelized honey, you know, I've got more hops, but we're dealing with multiple variables here. We're dealing with the hop variable and we're dealing with the caramelization variable. But that'll be interesting. I'll be curious to see how that turns out when you do that next one with the caramelized honey.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, I appreciate the input, guys. And I know there was some scuttlebutt. There was a possible second bottle being tossed around. Were you prepared on doing that tonight as well, or?
Well.
Yeah, I want to compare your graph.
Okay.
I think we're all eager to see the graph. I know that we have about half the show has elapsed. Do we have time for that tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let me crack open a bottle.
We better, because I'm not going to open mine.
We don't belong to a union, so we can do whatever the hell we want to do on this show. Ain't no union help here. All right, the graph. It's an oddball, I'm telling you, but it kind of grows on you. If you've never made this, I tell you, the first, you get it done, it's fermented, you get it racked off, you start bottling it, and you pour yourself a glass as you're bottling it. It's going to taste like shit. Okay, I guarantee it. And then, after a couple of weeks, it's almost something that you would want to pour into a bucket and clean the toilet with. I mean, it's just absolutely terrible. But then, it starts getting better and better, and it starts turning. And I mean drastic flavor changes. I mean, it's amazing. So I'm eager. I mean, I want to know. I want to hear from Jeff and Ryan. What did I send? Okay, I think everybody got the graph, right? Brian, did you get the graph?
I did. I just poured it.
Okay.
Yep, I did too.
This is probably going to be one of the strangest things you've ever tasted.
Well, and we've been talking about this quite a bit on the show. Yeah. I've been curious to see what this is going to look like at the end of all of this. And, you know, just, well, to start with the appearance, it is not what I expected.
Well, just keep in mind, Jeff, well, both of you guys, approach this as a cider. Remember, it's not a beer.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you say that, but, you know, this has the most copperish color cider that I've ever seen. It is a dark cider. Not that that's a bad thing, and it has a really nice head on it. Usually the cider does not retain the head for very long, so that's probably part of the character of the malt added to it. There's a really slight apple aroma to it.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Yeah.
I hate dead air. So, okay, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I thought if we were doing a video podcast right now, we would see him contemplating the glass. And
yeah,
he holds
my
it
nose
into the
like
sun,
halfway
into
down.
into the light. Yeah,
it's this very
like Hamlet holding a skull.
Yeah,
yeah. It's almost a sweet apple smell, but it's very light. Almost like if you've ever been out apple picking in an orchard and it's a little bit too old for the apples, a bunch of them have started to kind of fall and rot on the ground, and you get that pungent smell up close. As you're just kind of walking by or through the lanes, you get just that very light, but, you know, very distinctly apple smell. That's kind of what I'm getting off of this.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
Get your nose way down in the glass, take a deep breath, and think about a caramel apple at the fair.
Yeah, I can see that. It has that kind of a little bit of a sweetened candy sweetness to it too. Yeah, I get where you're coming from there. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to take a taste and see what I think about the taste.
Real quickly, this is on a torrefied wheat, a light DME, amber DME, and then the apple juice was enough of the Chris, help me out here. What the hell is that apple juice called?
Simply apple.
Simply apple. It's like raw apple juice, untreated and everything. The only difference from this recipe that I have that I did was that at the recommendation by Chris, I added 4 bags of black tea to give it some sort of tannin. I don't know whether that worked or not, 'cause I really don't get that yet, but.
Well, if you could taste the one I did without it, you would see the difference.
Yeah.
This is going to sound really funny, but if I rub my tongue against the roof of my mouth, I get the aftertaste of tannin really hard. That's the easiest way for me to detect tannin in this, and it is there. You're right, Chris, when you say that this is a cider. This is a cider. This is not a beer cider hybrid, but it's definitely. It's got something more to it than cider, but it's still very dry and crisp, which is how I like my cider. I'm not sure.
This graph is a fictitious, I mean, this is not some ancient recipe from anywhere. This is a fictitious drink that appeared on, what the hell show was it? What movie?
Is it Stephen King novel?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So, This is like somebody's rendition, putting thought to paper and coming up with a recipe, and this is what they came up with. And
JD, I'm just going to stick this in real quick and say that mine is ahead of yours as far as the tartness mellowing out.
Okay.
It tastes exactly like mine did 2 months ago.
Okay. Okay.
So, I think we've got exactly the same beverage, except that mine's got the tartness in mine has really died down a lot. So,
Ryan, what do you think?
Again, this is the, well, let me just start the kind of the sensory. It is a less than copper. I'll say it's just a little bit less than copper in color. You know, it's probably what you'd expect of an English IPA in color. You know, it's not too dark, but it's definitely got some brown or some, you know, some deep gold, amber, I guess amber to it. Now to me, when I opened it, again, I'm drinking this at room temperature, and I got just a bouquet of apple juice coming at me. You know, just it tasted like I opened my kids' apple juice in the morning and poured them a glass. So I got tons of fresh apple, and I'm going to say fresh apple because that's what I'm getting out of it. Now to go back to the taste and prior. Now again, I've tasted this one before, and my notes the first time again similar to the bourbon barrel one. It was cold the first time I had it. It was right out of the refrigerator. My notes were tons of apple up front. Lots of carbonation. I got a ton of crystal malt. I said, I'm getting a lot of crystal malt. And then you guys might recall, I said that I was getting a soapy astringent finish, which, you know, I said is the same. I wrote off as the same way some people taste soap when they eat cilantro, you know, or carrots or cilantro probably being the biggest one for most people. Mm-hmm. When I'm drinking it now, I still get the apple. It's like apple juice up front, dry apple juice or a very dry light cider. And it's very, very good up front. I really like it. I don't get the crystal malt that I did a month ago. A month ago, I had crystal malt. I'm not getting any of that malt right now. Again, it could be a temperature thing. And then I'm still getting a little bit of the soapiness, but that is much more subdued. And so again, we've got two variables at play here, one being time and the other being temperature. And I couldn't surmise which might be the factor. But again, overall, I am getting this very good apple flavor up front. I mean, it's not a cooked apple. It's not an overripe apple. It is, a very fresh apple that I'm getting, you know, a fresh apple. And then, I'm not getting any alcohol out of it at all in terms of, a little bite or a little heat. I'm not getting any of that. What do we have the ABV for this one, JD?
This is about 7.5%.
Yeah. So 7.5%.
You boys are going to be feeling it before the night's over.
I'm feeling it already.
My lips are already numb.
JD now, gets the Meat House Coup drunk in one night.
When I say fresh apple, I can probably narrow it down to even a couple varieties because I'm getting this a little bit of a tart. I'm getting a little tart apple, and then I'm also at the same time getting a complimenting sweetness to it. So it's almost like you bite into a Granny Smith and then you bite into a Fuji or you bite into a Honeycrisp or something. Cause I am getting that really nice balance of sweet and tart right at the same time or, you know, as, I guess, as I drink that right in the front. So Chris and Jeff, I don't know what temperature you guys are drinking these at, but, if it's cold, I say, you know, let it, make sure there's still a little bit in your cup when it warms up. And see if it opens up on you or it changes a little bit on you as it comes closer to, you know, say 60 degrees or somewhere in that range.
I know.
Well, I've had it cold and warm and room temperature and everything else. And, I mean, I already knew how this thing changed. I mainly just wanted to see if, by using the same exact recipe, how different. And really, this is not any different than mine. The only difference right now is that mine's a couple of months ahead of yours. So, in a couple of months from now, I can tell you that the tartness goes away to some degree, but just the right amount is going to still be there. And if you've ever had a Magners cider, it's about as close to a Magners as I've ever had.
Well, I got something even better than that. I got something I got something closer to a Magners. I'll talk about that here in a minute. But back to the apple juice, Ryan. This apple. Now, here again, Chris and I used exactly the same apple juice and the Simply Apple. Now, I don't know whether it's the same combination of apples in every batch, like what Chris gets and I get because he's in Mississippi, or whether they're, you know, some kind of, you know, whether they get them local. I have no idea how this stuff is produced. But when you drink the raw apple juice, the apple juice itself is very sweet, much sweeter than say a Mott's apple juice, the not from concentrate, clear apple juice you get, in a container. And this is like raw, unprocessed apple juice, no preservatives. You can only get it in the refrigerator section. So,
yeah, JD, it's kind of funny. I actually like the taste of Mott's better as far as just drinking the apple juice.
Yeah.
But I chose the Simply Apple because it didn't have any vitamin C or, you know, ascorbic acid added to it.
Right. Yeah. And according to, as you recall, according to the documents, that makes a difference in your grain selection. They recommend using 120 if you don't use, if you use apple juice that has the vitamin C in, they recommend using the 60L. If not,
no,
they
it's
recommend 120. Recommend the 120.
Mm-hmm.
I
think personally, I like the 120 anyway. You used 120 in this,
I used 120. Yeah, I used 120.
Yeah, that's what I used.
Yep. Yeah, you and I stayed on the same wavelength.
We did the same thing.
Yep.
Yep. So and it tastes exactly the same. It tastes just like mine did 2 months ago.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I'm digging it. I mean,
you're gonna have a treat in about 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
You're really gonna have a treat if you like it now. It just mellows even more.
Yeah,
it retains that Christmas. It's got that crisp light that a cider should have.
This is a good summertime 4th of July, something you want to take to the beach in the cooler and pass around. I would absolutely do that with this. I mean, I'm digging this stuff right now. So if it gets better, in 3-4 months, that's even better.
The biggest change is the tartness starts to mellow down some. Jeff and Ryan, I want to know I think on that sheet it said an overall impression. What is your overall impression of this at this stage?
You know, the more I drink of it, the more it kind of mellows out to room temperature. Because I started mine a little bit cold. I think I had it in the fridge like less than an hour at the very start of the show. And it was sitting at room temperature for, or I'm sorry, getting back to room temperature as we were reviewing the bourbon barrel. The more I drink of it, the more I get a very distinct kind of like that apple Jolly Rancher flavor. It's a very distinct apple and a kind of a candy sweet apple flavor. That balance with the dryness and the tartness, though, is pleasant. I do really like this. I would be interested to see how it develops over time. But, yeah, no, this is something I may have to try myself.
Yeah, this is I've got a case. I've got a little over a case of it put away. And I'm not going to touch it until maybe towards the end of summer and see what it's like then. But I was pretty amazed because when, you know, Chris, like you said, Chris started his several months before I did. So he would, you know, we would talk on and he would tell me what to expect. And sure enough, as this thing goes through its process, you're going to be absolutely amazed because this stuff goes from tasting like crap right out of the fermenter to absolutely tasting like more crap. You know, a few weeks, a month later, and then it starts this magical thing, and the flavors just, I mean, they like bounce around, and it gets really tart. I mean, really mouth puckering, almost like, you know, stuff a lemon peel in your mouth tart. And then that starts going away. And more of the apple starts coming. I mean, this is amazing stuff, guys. I'm telling you. I think the recipe's on the website. If not, I'll have to go in and check. Either way, I'll be happy to email the recipe rundown that I've got.
Let me answer your question. Oh yeah, go ahead. I want to know your impression.
I was going to say, yeah, to answer your question there. You know, let me give you a little analogy. If anybody has Netflix and watches Netflix, you know, Netflix right now, you know, when you watch a show or a movie, it asks you if you want to rate it, and you give it a 1 through 5 star rating. Netflix is getting rid of that, and they're just going to go to a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And the reason that they're getting rid of the 5-star rating system and just going to a thumbs up or thumbs down system is that they've got a problem of people try to become critics. Yeah. And for example, people would watch a movie that's bad, a bad movie, but they would enjoy it. And then they'd try to be a critic when they rated it, and they'd probably give it a low rating because it wasn't a good movie. So an example might be, let's say they watch, you know, what's a Saturday afternoon and you watch Sharknado. Well, Sharknado.
Picking Sharknado.
let's say you had a good time. Let's say you enjoyed watching. You go, hey, that was an enjoyable Saturday afternoon. I enjoyed that movie. And then it asks you to rate it. And you say, well, it was, you know, it was cheesy. It was, you know, it was bad. And, you know, I'm only going to give it 2 stars as a movie quality. But you enjoyed it, you know, so. But yeah. So they're trying to move away from having people be critics and just saying, did you enjoy it or didn't you enjoy it? Thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I look at this graph, there's, I don't want to do the star thing. I want to do the thumb thing. And, it changes so much. It's so different. And I might have some sort of, like I said, taste bud thing that has me perceive a little bit of soapiness in it. But my overall impression based on 2 times of having it here is young and potential. And so what I think is in the same way we talked about when you make a good stout or you make a good dark braggot, you know, you put it on the shelf for a year. You know, I mean, alongside of it, you should probably make a Kolsch or something that you can drink in 6 weeks or 4 weeks. And then, you know, while you're waiting for the other thing to age out, I think the same thing here. I think that if I made this, you know, I'd say let's bottle it up and come back and try it in a year, and then literally see how it is, because it's like you said, it's changed so much even in a month of me tasting it, you know, over the course mm-hmm. of twice in a month, that it's hard to give that definitive overall impression. Or maybe a better analogy is it's hard to rate a draft class right after the draft. You know, you got to give those yeah. players, whether it's the NBA or the NFL or whatever, you got to give those guys, you know, 4 or 5 years, and then you can come back and say, hey, how was that draft class? But you can't evaluate it on draft night.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, if you want an education in how beverages change with age, make the draft and open one a week.
Yep.
Just open one bottle a week. Like, I don't know, start it a month after you make it and open a bottle a week, and you will get an education on aging. You'll find out just how much things can change.
Yeah, because it'll definitely get to a point where you're going to wonder why you even made it in the first place. But, you know, just stick with it.
Yeah, but what's so strange is that you can taste it, and it can taste great. And then it goes the next week, it's back to tasting awful again.
Oh, yeah, just absolutely
terrible. And then the next week, it tastes great, and then it's back to awful. It just goes back and forth.
Yeah, that's the one thing that amazed me. And, you know, like I said, Chris telling me, you know, what to expect along the way. When he said it's going to get to a point where it's going to be undrinkable, it did. And the first thing in my mind was like, what in the hell did I just make? And, but you just stick with it. And, I agree with Ryan. I mean, a year from now, I mean, this might be some amazing stuff. And I would absolutely do it again. And I don't know that I would, you know, Chris, I don't know that I would even change anything. I really don't. I mean, what the hell would you change?
I think, you know, tasting mine now that it's got a little age, I think maybe that can of apple juice concentrate was unnecessary.
You know, I don't know.
I think it's unnecessary because I think it was Jeff. Was it Jeff or Ryan that said he got sort of that apple Jolly Rancher?
Right.
That was
yeah, I think yeah. that may be coming from that can of concentrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you do the base recipe. Leave out the torrefied wheat because you don't need a head on a hard cider. And you put in the 4 black tea bags and that's it. I mean, I think that's it. And then the rest is just age.
Yeah. Well,
part of me wonders how this would age on oak, though. I mean, like a medium or a dark oak. I wonder if that could chill out some of the tartness a little bit faster and give it a little more character. I don't know if that would ruin it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I'm thinking honey malt. I'm thinking maybe a little honey malt in the steeping.
Didn't you and I talk about the oak thing? I have oak on my brew log here with a question mark. And because I've got the notes that you and I talked about in the margin on my brew log here, and I have oak with a question mark. Didn't you and I talk about oak and we decided that, nah, maybe not, or maybe we needed to wait a long time and see where this thing's going to wind up first?
Yeah, I think we just said we were going to do the base recipe and see, you know, and then determine later on if we needed to.
Yeah, because and this might have been at a point where you know, you were given the fact that yours is a couple of months ahead of mine, and the changes that were taking part, that it may be premature. This is why I say I don't know right now. I don't think I would change anything. I would definitely do another batch just to do it because I like the way it's headed, but. You know, a year from now, it's going to be different. Now, a year from now, maybe we'll discover that, yeah, maybe there would have been another benefit from something else, from another ingredient, from oak, you know, that might have benefited the flavor, you know, made it a little bit better. So I think it's really premature to even do anything to change the recipe. I would do it, put it together. And let it ride for a year to see where it is. I mean, if Jeff and Ryan are going to do this, I wouldn't add anything and take anything away. I would do it per recipe, like Chris and I did, wait the time, make sure it's in a direction that's going to the point where you like it. And then the next batch, determine whether you want to add oak or add something else or whatever. I mean, that's my personal feeling.
But on the other hand, when you make something with apple, you very seldom go wrong with oak.
That's true.
If anything ages well on oak, it's anything that's apple.
That's true.
So
that's true.
I don't think you're going to hurt it with oak.
No. Maybe not.
It may just not be necessary, though. You know, you do have a valid point. This is premature to judge on. So,
yeah, I mean, from my standpoint, yeah. But I'm, you know, like I say, I'm going to wait the end of summer and see where it's at. Pop a bottle open then, and you know, maybe adjust my next batch according to what it tastes like then, knowing that a year from the time I pitch, I know where it's going to be. So, anyway, moving on, guys. I appreciate all your input on the stuff. I know we've got a cut now. Three of you sitting here tonight. Two of you got something different. One of you got a vanilla mead. Who was it?
That was me.
I got the vanilla mead.
Okay, just so you and okay, so and that means Chris and Aaron got something else, which I don't know what it is.
I so got next blueberry. Week,
okay, you got the blue. Oh yeah, you got the blueberry pie. you
is
and
that
Aaron.
The Pfizer?
That, yeah, you and Aaron
that's
got
the Pfizer.
You got the something like that. And we'll do that next week along with the maybe the orange beer if we've got time. And then of course Jeff and Ryan can do the vanilla mead. Now, Ryan, have your wife and you too, Jeff, have your wife give your wife a little sip of that. I want their input as well.
Sure.
All the women in my life love it. I don't particularly care for it, but all the women that I've ever given it to just absolutely love it. So I'd be curious to see what they thought of it. Of course, the last time I had a sip has been, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 months ago. So be curious to find out about it. We'll do that next week. I told you that I had a Chris, something along the lines of Magners. I've been working on this cider thing. I have done countless ciders, and a lot of them have gone down the drain because they just turned out like crap. I finally got something that I think is pretty good, and I need to send you guys another box and put a couple of bottles of this in. I just bottled this yesterday, and this is going back to the Simply Apple juice. I got 5 gallons worth, and it's just that. Okay, and about 1 pound or so of my wildflower honey, just enough to get it up to 1060. I wasn't looking for any kind of honey impact whatsoever. I didn't want to use brown sugar or table sugar. I wanted to use honey. And so it just pound, 1060 on the ABV. I used Danstar Windsor yeast, which is a British yeast. This thing fermented out, this thing came out to, from 1060 to, all the way to 1008. So whatever the ABV is on that, now what is that, 6-7% maybe? But this stuff, I carbonated it. Now I put one can of apple juice concentrate when I racked it the first time, and then you could call it three cans of apple juice concentrate. I put it in a keg and carbonated it. And man, is this stuff good. I mean, you talk about something close to Magners. This is more than close to Magners than the Graf ever will be. If you want to give it a shot, you know, do a gallon of it or whatever. Get that simply apple juice, and that's all it was. 5.5 gallons of apple juice, 1 pound. I have 1 pound plus. I don't know what it was, just enough to get it up to 1060 to start with. The pH was right around 2.8, 2.9. No problems there. Again, I used the Danstar Windsor yeast. And after it hits secondary, three cans of apple juice concentrate. I used Fermade K, 3.21 grams of Fermade K initially, 3.5 grams two more times. That was it. Let it ride, and it went down to 1008. On the barometer. So, damn, it tastes good. Anyway. So that's that recipe. Now we were going to go over, we were actually going to go through like a what's in the hopper thing. We're going to save that till next week because we're running out of time here. I did want to touch on, this is something that Ryan and Chris actually, touched on in all these emails, and Brian actually started this sometime back, and this has to do with steeping grains and adding them to a mead. Ryan, you started a coffee braggot a number of months ago, and as I recall, you were having some difficulty with it, or was it that particular one, or no? I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, no, that one was fine. Yeah, back in early September, I started a 1 gallon experiment of trying to create a coffee mead after, you know, some of the trouble that you guys had had with your coffee experiments using actual coffee.
Yeah.
And so what I did was I took a pound of chocolate malt, and I'm talking here about the barley, not the Quaker, the,
right,
the Hershey's, but a pound of chocolate malt, and I cold steeped it just at room temperature for 24 hours. And then I had a half ounce of hops. And I boiled that, and then what I had done is I had combined that steeping water, that hop water, hop tea, and a pound of alfalfa honey, and got it up to about a gallon, and then used USO5 to ferment that, and that came out, it smelled just like a real nice coffee, maybe with a little bit of hops. I know it sounds weird, but I think even Starbucks now sells a hopped coffee. I mean, I guess it's not that weird, but it came out pretty well. I've done tastings of it, you know, it's still sitting in tertiary. But it's got some good flavor, and that was done with the steeping grains, that chocolate malt. What I had then done later in, I'm trying to find the page here. Let's see. Was I took a, here we
you
go.
Had a, this was in, you had a honey malt.
Yeah, this was in late December, December 22nd. I took a pound of Canadian honey malt. So again, barley, and cold steeped it. And then I added a pound of honey. And I used 1122 yeast on that one. So that would be the wine yeast that I had used yeah. On this one. And I let it, it started fermenting immediately. And then what happened was it developed, it was souring, started to sour on me. And again, you know, I did not boil after I took the steeping grains out, you know, I didn't boil it, which is what you typically do if you were doing a beer, you know, you'd most likely hot steep, you know, and then after the 30 minutes or so, you'd take your steeping bag out, then you'd boil it along with your whatever else you were, I guess, your extract, if that's what you're making an extract brew. And you'd boil it and that would sanitize it. Now this soured on me. Now I believe that, almost all grains that you're going to buy at a homebrew shop are going to have, pediococcus on or pedio on them. You know, which is a wild, you know, bacteria or a wild, you know,
organism. Yeah.
And this has turned out pretty well. I mean, it's got a really great aroma to it right now. I'm just kind of letting it hang out, letting it do its thing. It's got this great, almost lambic aroma to it as we're going here. Now, if you go back to the coffee one, I did not boil that either, but that doesn't have any hints of going sour, and the reason there is the hops. You know, if once you get above, say, 10 IBUs, you really knock out a lot of those organisms that are gonna get in there, and that's what hops were originally used for, as a preservative. So, you know, the steeping grains, I think, are a great way to enhance a mead. Now, when I've done it with the steeping grains being the star of the show. Chris has an idea of how to use them to play a supporting character. But as the star of the show, I've had some pretty decent success and want to try a little more. I think I did not boil mine, because I wanted to kind of have this rawness. You know, I never heat my honey. I never, you know, pasteurize my honey or anything like that. If I'm making a beer, you know, I add it, the honey, after the wort is cooled, you know, and it's not going to cook the honey. And I was doing the same thing with the grains, as I said, I'm going to cold steep them because I want to bring out that less astringency, which especially with dark grains. And I want this kind of, this colder steeped, softer, less acidity, flavor to it. And then I added the honey and I did the whole thing kind of raw, if we can use that word. You know, again, if you're going to do that, you've got to do one of two things. You've either got to add hops, which will, you know, prevent it from souring, or you've got to be okay with it souring. If that's what you want to do, you want to go for a sour mead. Or of course, after you do your steeping, you boil. Even if you do a hot steep, you know, you're not at sanitary temperature yet. So that it's cold or hot, you know, you boil it and then you don't have to worry about it. You know, it's souring without the hops. You know, you can do it that way. But again, I guess to kind of put a pin or wrap up, where I was coming from, the chocolate malt turned out well. The honey malt, soured, I think is good. I think it's got excellent potential. It's coming along really well. I'm going to do it again with the honey malt, but I am going to boil. So I'm going to steep And then after I steep and pull out the grain bag, I'm going to boil it for a few minutes just to make sure it's all sanitized, and then add my honey and see how that turns out. And then I want to try it again with some sort of a caramel malt, and I haven't picked out which level yet. If I'm going to go light, medium, or, you know, how high I'm going to take it. You know, it's kind of, that's a work in progress. But again, I think it's an excellent way, to try a different style of mead. I mean, I think technically it falls into a braggot, even though we're not necessarily adding fermentable sugars. We're adding, still adding that flavor. And I think that at least in my interpretations of, BJCP guidelines, it's more about the flavor that you're getting than the fermentables that you're getting. But like I said, Chris has a little bit of a different take, so maybe we'll turn it over to Chris and see what he thinks.
Yeah, Chris.
Well, you know, we've talked about using raisins, bananas, vanilla beans, all sorts of things to alter the body and balance of a mead and mouthfeel.
Yeah.
And I just was thinking about this same thing. And yeah, I did remember Ryan doing this, because actually that's the reason you came on the show in the first place, was because we were talking about the coffee. And you had just done this steeping grain thing. So, but you know, in the course of making these braggots and everything, I was reading about melanoid malt and honey malt, mainly because I don't want to ever do another decoction. And but when you read the qualities that it imparts, I was thinking that this guy that came up with the Graf recipe, you know, it's just a coincidence that it was in a Stephen King novel, because he wasn't actually trying to recreate what the graph from the book. He was actually trying to find a way to make a hard cider drinkable at a younger age, and he was looking to the malt to be able to help smooth out some of the rough edges and just make it drinkable. So I was just thinking, some of the problems that you have with a traditional is body, mouthfeel, and the fact that they can be very acidic depending on the honey you use, and they can be rough around the edges when they're young if things don't go perfectly during fermentation. So I was just thinking along the same lines that guy was. Could you do the same thing with malt that he was doing with the Graf? Just use whatever water you're going to use to make your mead, and steep some grains in it, maybe some honey malt, some melanoid malt even, and just use it not as a flavoring agent or as a, you know, trying to make a braggot, but use it the same way you would put a half a banana in to increase the body and mouthfeel. I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
How much do you think would it take to introduce that in, say, a 5-gallon batch?
Well, you know, that was the thing, because I don't have any experience with either one. I've not used honey or melanoid malt, and from what I can tell, in a grain bill, it's usually like 10% or less, and most of the recipes you find are going to range anywhere from 4 ounces to maybe up to 8 ounces on average, for beers that have it. So I don't know how it would go in a mead, or if it would even accomplish what I'm talking about. But I just think it's another approach that people might want to look into taking and experimenting with. And if you did want to go beyond just simply adjusting the mouthfeel or whatever, then you've got all these different malts available that can be steeped. Like Ryan said, if you want a coffee mead, maybe it's best not to use coffee. Maybe it's best to use chocolate malt. So how many flavor combinations could you really come up with and make a pseudo braggot? You know, you're sort of making a braggot because it's malt and honey, but you're not getting fermentables from the malt. So
yeah.
I just think there's a whole wide open category there that could be experimented with that I haven't heard anybody doing really to any great extent. I think Ryan's the only person I know.
To answer your question about the mouthfeel, I think there's a couple things at play. And I think one of the biggest things at play is the yeast. Now, you know what, when you get that malty mouthfeel in a beer, and your beer ends up at, you know, 10, 20, let's say, it's because of those unfermentable sugars that are left in that beer. And so it's, or, you know, how much the yeast will attenuate, you know, as well. There's, you know, two things there. So it comes down to me to, are you getting any gravity points at all when you steep? And again, if you cold steep for a week, you're probably going to pull a few more than if you hot steep for 30 minutes. It's not to say one's right or one's wrong. I'm just saying if you get a few more gravity points, and then it's the yeast you're using and what type of sugars can that yeast break down? I mean, the reason that you can, bottle carbonate a beer with a gravity of, you know, let's say 1040 even, say the real high gravity barley wine or something, you want to carbonate it, and you can carbonate it with EC1118, is because that EC1118 isn't going to break down anything else, any of those complex sugars in the beer. It's only going to break down those simple sugars in the that you're using when you add your corn sugar. And so I think it a little bit to me, it's are you getting some of those unfermentable or hard to ferment sugars, and what is the yeast that you're using? What is that able to break down, and then what is it going to leave behind? And those two things to me are gonna work on what you're getting out of that mouthfeel when you add the malt. I think that if you were to do say a Crystal 40 or something and you're a Caramel 40 and you were gonna steep that for, you know, in hot water for 20 minutes and, you know, it added zero gravity points, just a little bit of color, a little bit of flavor, and then you put a pound of honey in it, and then you added a yeast that still took it down to, you know, 996 or something. I don't know if that malt did much for you in terms of mouthfeel. Yeah, it's definitely going to leave something behind in terms of color and maybe flavor, but that mouthfeel is going to be, you know, a different factor.
What, I mean, let's say you didn't use the grain. I mean, let's forego the steeping part. What if you use like a liquid malt extract? I mean, they come in all different, you know, light, extra light, dark, chocolate malt.
You're back into a braggot then. Because you're getting fermentables. Yeah.
And the,
well, I don't know. It was just an idea. You know, it was something that popped in my mind. And
I'm looking at the last sentence on your email says a malted mead with a question mark. That's what I'm thinking. Malted mead. What if you just threw like even a dry malt extract? You know?
Well, dry malt extracts, those are made from base malts, which are meant to add fermentables. And I think I didn't specify this, but what I was actually getting at was, more specialty malts, things that don't necessarily go through an enzymatic conversion or anything like that. Strictly adding flavor and color and character rather than fermentables. So I think when you start adding fermentables from the malts, you've got to brag it again.
Yeah. Well, certainly worth exploring for sure. Guys, we're gonna go ahead and wrap the show. I mean, this is the problem with doing these shows, and we find interesting things to talk about, and we can go all night. But we're at the limit for tonight. This is certainly something that we can absolutely put on the calendar for next week. Aaron will be back with us as well. Plus, we've got a couple of more offerings from JD's house that'll be up for review as well. And that's a vanilla mead and then the apple pie that a couple of them haven't had yet. Ryan's kind of on the up list here. He's had, I think, everything that you guys are getting with the exception of the vanilla. But we'll go through all that next week. Plus, we also have Aaron's other two meads that we've got to get out of the way as well. Because remember, we left off. He sent us, four or five of them. I think we've done a couple of them already. So we need to get back with Aaron. So we maybe put him at the front of the line next week. And then, by the end of the show next week, you guys ought to be pretty well soused if you're not already tonight. So
I was going to say, forget Nick. I mean, he's good right now.
But, you have no idea what it means. I certainly appreciate the input, you guys. It makes me feel really good about what I'm doing. And that's kind of where it's at for me. When I can give this stuff to my relatives, my neighbors, they're going to come back and say one thing, but I know they just want more liquor. But you guys, I know you guys will give me an honest opinion about it, and it really counts. So I certainly appreciate that. So tell you what, why don't we all come back to the table next week? We'll do this all over again. The Mead House, Tuesday nights here. The replay should be available in the morning sometime. So check the website, themeadhouse.com. Till then, we'll see you next week.